Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand, walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be.
Well, good evening and welcome to Yada Yada Radio. We're here with Kirk. How are you this evening, my friend?
Pretty good. I appreciate it. How are you doing?
Good.
Okay.
A couple of things I wanted to go over before we get to the Torah. First is that we are in the midst of the weirdest thing I think I've experienced politically. That is the impeachment of someone who is not president. But I had a friend that sent me, he says, you want evidence? You talk about there's no proof of fraud in the election. Well, if you want proof that Trump must have won, the Democrats are trying to impeach him. So, I guess that's proof that he actually won. Nonetheless, I did watch the 15-minute Democratic video and some thoughts on it. First, to put together a video like that, you are not a juror. So this pretense that the Senate is sitting as jurors to decide the fate of a man who was president is utter nonsense. That video would not have passed muster in any courtroom under any circumstances. It is exceedingly unfairly edited. That said, Trump's rhetoric the day of the protests was inexcusable. He's just a dunderhead. What mm-hmm. he said, he encouraged people to walk down Pennsylvania Avenue. He encouraged them to impose their will on Congress. He said that Pence ought to man up and do what he wanted him to do. He talked about fight like hell and all that sort of stuff. What he said after having lost the election is really unacceptable. Mm-hmm. And listen, he talked about the fact that he would have proof that that he won by a landslide by the end of the day, and of course he produced none. Now, the media that says there's absolutely no proof of election fraud, that is the monolithic speak of the liberal media. They repeat things so often that are untrue that it comes across where people actually believe they are true and it is not. But mm-hmm. there is considerable evidence of election fraud. It's just not near to the scale that would be required for Trump to have won. And the biggest issue of all, of course, is those mail-in ballots and the lack of controls over said ballots. And therefore, the opportunity to cheat was enormous. Politicians, and particularly liberal politicians, are very Machiavellian and will cheat and knowingly cheat. And so it is likely that there was considerable fraud. But the way that we deal with ballots in this country is that we hide the evidence, we do something that in the civilian sector would put you in jail. We destroy the evidence.
Uh-huh.
If you destroy evidence, that's a felony in any place other than the U.S. government actions. So that part is you just have to say what Trump did, I think, was unconscionable. Now, the Democrats show in 15 minutes video that none of us saw the 8 to 10 hours I watched this, because we were watching something that heretofore had never happened before. It was truly an amazing thing. And my reaction was, these guys are absolute nincompoops, and they're doing themselves enormous harm by what they're doing, but that the overwhelming preponderance of people were old and fat and armed with nothing but cell phones and taking selfies to commemorate their trip to Washington. And that was the preponderance of the 8 to 10 hours that I watched. There is, of course, none of that video in the 15 minutes. And context is king, if you want to understand what happened. And instead, there's video that none of us saw that day, and they're trying to hold Trump accountable as he would have his speech to video that none of us had access to, which is that, and I've always said this in every one of our shows, that those who actually breached inside, broke through windows, and went into the U.S. Capitol and were their flagpoles beating up on anybody that was in their way, what they did is a crime. They should be punished to the full extent of the law. That's not only breaking and entering, it is also assault and battery. And those are crimes, and those crimes can be felonies depending on the severity of them.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did was completely wrong. Now, I will continue to say that the average protest, whether it be in Washington or any really city, but of course in Minneapolis, of course in Portland, of course in Seattle, but in most major cities, when Black Lives Matter, in fact in Los Angeles, when they were protesting, there was far more violence against innocent bystanders, far more violence.
Yes.
Far more destruction of property, looting and arson. And it went on for day after day after day, where this was a matter of hours, and there was essentially no looting. There was no arson. And for the Democrats to make this sound like this is another 9/11 and this catastrophic event, when you compare it to the upheaval of Black Lives Matter, is just utter nonsense. It says that people are unable to evaluate anything rationally.
Different. Yeah.
And the truth is that while they're both nincompoops, there's a little more credibility on the side of the Trumpite protesters than there is on Black Lives Matter. At least the Trumpite protesters took their protest to the people that they have a grievance with, as opposed to Black Lives Matter. They're looting and stealing from people and burning buildings down that they have no grievance with. Now, that said, one of the things that is deeply troubling to me about this whole process is the way the media went on and America went on a witch hunt, where it is essentially unacceptable to express a conservative viewpoint. And no matter what you say as a liberal, that is always acceptable. A marvelous example happened this week with Disney. Disney has a program called The Mandalorian. It's a television variation of Star Wars and the bounty hunter, the Mandalorian character, and a baby Yoda. And there's a fellow named Pablo, let me get his name correctly here. What's Pablo's name? Well, I'll come up with it here in a moment. Pedro, excuse me, Pedro Pascal. Pedro Pascal plays the Mandalorian character. He is a over-the-top liberal, crazy liberal. And there's a woman who plays a quasi-love interest of the Mandalorian, And her name is Gina Carano. Gina Carano was fired by Disney. And Pablo Pascal is continuing to be employed. Now, both of them had social media postings that were inappropriate. Carano's was that she spoke out in favor of Trump and made some claims that just really aren't true. But she wasn't an anti-Semite. She didn't incite violence. She just showed her political support for Trump. And when you do that, you move often into the world of conspiracy. And I looked at her post on a 1 to 10 scale of a nincompoop. She's probably a 2. But she is a conservative nincompoop working for an exceedingly liberal organization. Now, Pablo Pascal, who is the over-the-top liberal, he took pictures of the mythical Palestinians, which he claimed was a Jewish concentration camp during World War II, and equated America trying to have some control over its borders with being like the Nazis. Now, the Nazis put people in concentration camps for no reason whatsoever, worked them to death or killed them, and America is simply trying to keep people out of their country as opposed to locking people up in jail. I mean, this guy, what he said was so utterly stupid, so utterly wrong, and Disney doesn't even criticize. And they're horrified by the conservative. This tells you just how far we've gone off the deep end of the country.
God. Well, what were these Jews in Israel supposed to do during World War II when they were all locked up in Germany? There wasn't no Israel in World War II.
No.
Come on.
Well. Yes.
Well, I mean, so there were people there, but no country.
He got his picture wrong. He got his what he said was the opposite of what's true.
Yeah, everything.
And yet,
everything.
And because he compared America to Nazi Germany, which is moronic, he is he's exonerated. Nobody even cares at Disney. And this woman, because she speaks favorably of Trump, she is fired.
That's not right.
It's just
ain't right.
Thing.
I don't care what it is. No. I don't care what she is. It ain't right. This, you know, it's just wrong.
We don't have free speech in America.
That's exactly
anymore.
It. Yeah.
No, I would
stupid,
love for her to not only sue Disney, but to prevail mightily over Disney. But you know, we'll see what transpires. I know one thing: the Mandalorian show, which cost them $11.5 million an episode, I will never watch another episode. Probably never again anything from Disney. I'm disgusted by them. All right. With that said, let's turn to the text. We were just getting into what would be considered the penalty phase, but really is no penalties, but it's still God's reaction to
consequence.
Consequence. God's reaction to the consequence of what they had done. He says, you know, if you you can eat from any tree you want, it's all good, but if you eat from this tree, you're going to embody what it means to die. And so we know what Adam said when God said, what did you do? And you know, Adam said, hey, it's that woman that you gave to me. She's the one that told me to eat, and I ate. So it's he didn't so much blame the woman as he blamed God.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Pretty much. That Adam, as a
fault.
That was really stupid. All right. So here's then Yahweh, who is God, said to the woman, why did you do this? Perfectly good question, right? Why did you do this?
Mm-hmm.
So do you think God's going to ask that question if he didn't want us not only to know her answer,
consider it,
but to consider the implications of it?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. And so would we be foolish not to consider the implications of it? Of course. The woman said, the tempting and toxic creature. Waha Nakash. That sorcerous snake, this venomous viper,
yes.
The spellbinding serpent.
Enchanter, yeah.
Yeah, Nakash is one who enchants and captivates.
Mm-hmm.
Deceived and deluded me, Nasha. Caused me to depart from the correct path by craftiness and trickery, giving me false hope, placing in me his debt by beguiling me. But what is the difference between what Hasatan did and what Paul did?
It's exactly the same. He twisted what God said using his credibility.
Yep. Deceived and deluded. Caused people to depart from the correct path by craftiness and trickery. Giving people false hope that they're going to find their loved ones in heaven. Let me just be perfectly clear. There has never been, and there will never be, a single Christian in heaven. Not one, not ever. So, if your loved one died a Christian, they are not in heaven. If your loved one died a Orthodox Jew, they are not in heaven.
In heaven.
If your loved one died as a secular, agnostic or atheist, a socialist, they are not in heaven. If your loved one died as a Muslim, they're not in heaven. And we can say that with absolute certainty because there is a prerequisite for being part of Yahweh's covenant family, and it is only covenant members that are allowed into God's home. And that prerequisite is that you walk away from societal, religious, and political influences. So anyone who continues to be religious is not invited into heaven. They're excluded from heaven. Now, that does not mean that you cannot enter heaven having been a Christian. I was a Christian. You were a Christian.
Yes. Absolutely.
And we're now part of the covenant. And what we did is we came to recognize that Christianity was a pile of lies. And we renounced it, walked away from it, disassociated ourselves from it, and we are no longer deceived or deluded by Paul or by the Christian New Testament.
Yeah, we sobered up,
now,
didn't we?
Yeah, now one of the things, by the way, that I learned is, and I think I shared a little bit of this on a program not too long ago, was that really the, with the exception of the book of Jacob, the couple of letters that are ascribed to Shimon Kefesh, Peter, the revelation, which is basically a rehash of prophetic books in the Torah and the prophets, that with exception of the two books that John wrote, and John's letters are not well attested, so we really don't know who wrote those. Peter's letters are really not well attested, so we don't really know who wrote those. And Jacob's letter is not well attested, so we really don't know who wrote them. But one of the things we do know is that Yohanan is very poorly maintained. There's enormous parts of it that were contrived centuries later. And that Luke was Paul's attaché. And that Mark was somebody that Paul specifically said that his guy is really useful to my ministry. I need him sent to me. And then he would tell people that if you can find him, that you need to deal with him in the way that I've instructed. And then you need to send him to him. And Mark is the basis of both Luke and Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
So I think of Matthew's words, something like 98% are found in Matthew. Matthew is about 60% based upon Luke and about 20%, excuse me, on Mark and about 20% plus percent on Luke, and the other part of it is plagiarized from an account that was written in Hebrew by the disciple Loewy Levy.
Loewy.
Yeah. So Paul is the author of really the entirety of it, other than what's the Book of John and Revelation. Otherwise, it's the Christian New Testament is Paul, and Paul was
the Book of Paul,
total and complete scum. So,
you know,
Satan, what do you do? Deceived and deluded. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, I was just going to say, I was going through my stack of books this week, and I found this old book I had on Paul, and I thumbed through it, and that's what the guy says. He says, without Paul, there ain't nobody, there's no Christianity. And then they try to defend him, but he said, this is all him.
Yeah, Christianity is all Paul. Yeah. In fact, even the name Christianity and the Christo, name Christ is from Paul's letters. And and what you see beyond Paul's letters in the four books, with the exception of Yohanan, they're all Paul's pals. Yeah, it's Christianity is Paul. Nothing more, nothing less.
Yeah.
In fact, as I'm translating now again, Chabaouk 1, it's stunning what God had to say about him. That's so much more indicting when you really get into the roots of the words that he chose. It's just riveting what God had to say. Okay, so Chawa, who's nameless at this point, she's just the woman. She didn't accept responsibility either. And clearly, she was complicit. She not only misquoted God, she wanted to become like God.
Mm-hmm.
She clearly wanted to become like God. Unlike man, she surveyed the situation, she thought about it, she made a conscious decision. Then she passed her lapse in judgment onto Adam. What she did not do was compare what Satan had said to what Yahweh had instructed. And that's the key. If you don't do that, you're going to be easily deceived. She did not do that. And then, knowing that she had made a horrible mistake, she brought man down with her. She became what the adversary had projected. He made a terrible mistake, and then he brought mankind down with him. This precipitous decline from good to bad occurred because of nasha, delusional and beguiling deceptions. Culture, like civilization, is something we are conditioned into embracing as good, uplifting. Boy, if you say cultured, it's uplifting and lighting. Right. I think of, Rome, and it's the grandeur of Rome. No, these civilizations were disgusting. They were horrible. They were vicious. They were oppressive, deceitful, enslaving. Boy, you think that people with Black Lives Matter have an issue today. Can you imagine being a minority under the Roman Empire? But we're talking about Black Lives Matter. They are a perfect example of being deceived.
Mm-hmm.
They claim that the culture is racist, that whites are suppressing and killing blacks, and yet the opposite is true. The problem in the African American culture is they're killing themselves.
Black on black crime. Yeah,
and it's horrific. The fact that young black men, lacking proper guidance, are 800% more criminally violent than others. And when a black person is killed, 93% of the time, the perpetrator is also black, proves this point. It's indisputable, irrefutable. Rather than blaming others for their mistakes, as Adam and Chawa had done, and learning something in the process, the only viable solution is to accept responsibility and then strive to improve. That's what the African American community needs to do. When we try to solve liberal caused problems with more liberalism, we're just never going to improve because we're unable to accept responsibility. Indeed, the American South was racist. It was oppressive. 70 years ago, but it is no longer so. And more importantly, affirmative action and the transfer of trillions of dollars from whites to blacks has created tremendous opportunities for African Americans. What happened in a minority of American states six generations ago is not responsible for what is occurring today. In reality, with all of America's failings, and boy, she has more than her share, America has become the least racist, most universally opportunistic nation for minorities in the history of humankind.
Count the millionaires.
So why are African Americans blaming others for what they have done to themselves? And worse, why they blame others when they ought to be trying to capitalize on the opportunity that they have been given? And why do so many others concur with them?
That's the amazing question to me.
Yeah, if you genuinely care about prolonging life, then why aren't you trying to resolve the problems in the African-American culture that are robbing far too many blacks of their lives? You know, I live on an island in the Caribbean Sea. And in this island, there is a fair amount of black-on-black crime. It's very, very seldom does a Crucian, a black man, kill a white person. Most all of the crime is related to one or two things. Either they didn't pay your drug dealer, or your rival drug dealer, or you are alleged to have taken somebody's woman. Can't be their wife because most don't marry. It's just you took somebody's woman and they solve it that way. And because of the fact that the community shelters their own and they don't hold them accountable, the murder rate here is seven times greater than it is in the continental U.S. And they might say, why would you choose to live in a place where the murder rate is seven times greater? Well, because I don't do drugs. And I'm delighted with my wife and have no interest in somebody else's woman. So that puts me out of harm's way in terms of the problems. But nonetheless, it's a very serious problem. And in this culture, there isn't a single Caucasian politician. Not one. There's no conservative politician. Not one. There's no conservative judge. There's no conservative prosecutor. There's no Caucasian judge. There's no Caucasian prosecutor. Everybody.
And no opportunity to be one. Yeah.
Oh, none. Zero. And so how can you blame in the continental U.S. whites for your problem when I live in a community that's two-thirds
controlled by
black American? Yeah. And they're racist. There's no chance that a white Caucasian or conservative is going to be elected. None. And yet the crime rate and murder rate is much higher than it is anyplace else. There's even the problem because of the welfare nature of the U.S. and food stamps and everything else, and unemployment benefits. It's almost impossible to get a Crucian to work. There's lots of blacks here that are exceedingly quality individuals and work hard. And, you know, I'm up to 20, 25 people here a day. Most are blacks. And gosh, one of our guys today, he had a bad week. We sat down, we had chocolate cake and ice cream together just to give him a break. We have wonderful relationships, but with the things we find, they all come from different islands. Where there isn't that support mechanism of the liberal society. And if you don't work, you don't eat. And there's an entirely different ethic and ethnos that goes along with that. And what we have done with this liberal society is we have taken people's character away so they no longer think it's important to work. And that's important here as we continue to study Yah's response, because what he's going to say is the remedy to your problem is you need to go to work. And so if God is saying the remedy to the fall of and the mistakes that were made by Adam and Chawa was you need to go to work, that's not the penalty, it's the solution. And so if you're not working and not trying to work, well, shame on you.
Yeah, that's, that's the answer.
Now, I've got to be careful here. There are people who are physically disabled.
Yeah, we're not talking about the handicapped or something.
So if you're physically disabled, then society ought to take care of you. It's a shame. Even when society takes care of you, it's still not. You'd still, most people would prefer to be whole. So we're talking about people who are physically able, which are 99% of those who are in government subsidies. They just choose not to work. You know what all Biden wants to do is forgive all student loans. That'll be the first step in forgiving all debt. You talk about destroying the not only the value of the currency and the economy, but also a sense of fairness. Why would somebody, I'm a good buddy who passed that article to me, worked his tail off, several jobs is going to college. I worked through college. Why would somebody who worked for college that didn't take out loans, what are you going to do? Now, we essentially get punished, and you reward those who took out the loans who didn't work? I'm sorry. There's something exceedingly wrong about that. If you borrow money and don't pay it back, that's a crime, even if the government tells you we're going to legitimize it. The truth is that the problem has nothing to do with ethnicity and all to do with culture. That is why Yahweh said that he wanted Abram not just to walk away from Babel, the confusing intermixing of religion and politics in Babylon, but he wanted him to disassociate from the culture of the community that he came from. Culture is very corrupting. The cult of man is the reason for the fall of man. We just saw it manifest in these two people's lives. It's the essence of conspiracies. Somebody else is always responsible for somebody else's foibles. Now, if we retain our focus for a moment on Nasha, it's spelled identically in the Hebrew text to Nasa. Nasa is the operative term in the third instruction where Yahweh said that I will not forgive anybody who promotes or accepts, lifts up, endures the corruption of my name, the negation of my name. But it could also be Nasha. And hopefully it is Nasha, because you would hope that the unforgivable sin isn't simply accepting and tolerating the grievous act of negating the merits of Yahweh's name by calling him the Lord, but instead engaging in some form of deception and deliberate corruption. And so if it's Nasha, if that's what God actually meant to say in the third statement to the etched in stone, then it would be that the unforgettable sin is doing something deliberately deceitful to negate the value of Yahweh's name, like replacing Yahweh with the Lord would be a good example. So if Yahweh intended Nasha versus Nasha, then simply concurring with the removal of Yahweh's name from his Torah would be unforgivable. And yet if Yahweh intended for us to read Nasha, then it is deliberate deception, delusions which take others away from God, which becomes the unresolvable crime. The reason I say they're written the same in the Hebrew text, it's the sin versus shin. And in the diacritical marking today is to put a dot over the right side or the left side, the right side as a shin, the left side as a sin. And so the huge difference in these two words.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly as the as we look at the third statement that God etched on his tablets. So there is every reason to conclude that we will find Adam and Chawa in Shamaim. God loved them. More importantly, Yahweh's Torah guidance does not exist to condemn us, but instead to exonerate us. Yahweh wants to lift us up, not push us down, which would be Nasha. His seven Mikre invitations to meet lead to our emancipation, to our salvation. The covenant is a family, not a courtroom. There's another religious misconception, too, that we ought to correct. And there is only one sin that is universally deadly from a spiritual perspective. And therefore, the Catholicism's seven deadly sins, some of them are really hilarious. But one of them being a couch potato. I don't know what the word is that they
slop.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You just go, oh, my God. No. Guys, let me tell you, that you, everything that you could do to deserve Sheol, hell, you all as Catholics have done. And being a sloth is not one of them. In fact, a sloth would be specifically excluded from hell. Because a sloth isn't doing anything to mislead
to have any interest in him at all.
Right. All right. Let's just have a quick review before we move on to the Yahweh's response to all these. This is Genesis Bereshit 2:15 to the conclusion. Yahweh Almighty relationally selected and grasped hold of the man named Adam, and he settled him in the Garden of Eden. Great joy. To minister to her and to closely observe her, closely examining and carefully considering it. Work. Yahweh obviously thinks work is good because he put Adam in the garden to serve the garden, to minister her, and to closely examine and carefully consider it. Even to be observant is work, but from God's perspective, and by the way, from mine, it's delightful. Well, work, it has become a pejorative, but it isn't.
No.
My wife constantly kids me, says, you know, you just really need to slow down sometimes. Just do nothing occasionally. And I'm always going. I mean, I am the ever ready bunny. I got up this morning at 5:30 and I came right in here and started translating Chabaouk. And then, you know, my crews came in. I was orchestrating what we're doing. And it just, you just go and until you conk out at the end of the day and get, fall asleep, right? I like work. I've always liked work. I don't know what people have against work. Anyway, the Garden of Eden, as Adam was brought into the garden to work. Then Yahweh Almighty provided direction concerning and on behalf of Adam the man, saying, from every tree of the garden you can continually and actually eat, enthusiastically being fed and nurtured. Therefore, could there have been a forbidden fruit?
No.
Yeah, we're really clear. From every tree in the garden you can continually
eat.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Enthusiastically being fed. But the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, that which is, and by the way, there's really no Hebrew word for but, it's simply and, wa, new sentence, from the tree of knowledge of good, it's tov, that which is beneficial and productive, correct and proper, favorable and enjoyable, desirable and agreeable, moral and right, valuable and worthy, even beautiful, generous, pleasing, pleasant, festive, joyful, and bad, raw. Raw is the counterpart of, so I don't know why they call it good and evil, because the counterpart of good is bad.
Yeah.
Now, you can add evil to the list of words, but they should be counterparts because that's what it is. So if if tobe is effective, then raw is ineffective.
It's ineffective.
If one
yeah.
is productive, the other is counterproductive. If one is
Correct.
Correct, the other is errant. If one is proper, the other is improper. Disadvantageous, undesirable, disagreeable, immoral, both wrong and worthless, restrictive, displeasing, harmful, malignant, depraved, saddening, and saddening. Do not make a habit of continuing to eat from it. Therefore, it's written in the imperfect. Yeah.
Do not make a habit. That
right.
does not mean you could not eat one.
That's right. Because you and I, we were both Christians, plague of death.
Yeah, we ate a little bit of fruit.
Yeah, we did. But we don't anymore.
No, sir.
You know, so the moment you stop, you're no longer in conflict with the instruction. So if Jawa, let's say if Adam had walked in and he thought, Jawa, what in the world are you doing?
Don't do that.
Well, you know, the saying,
put that down.
Just set the daggum thing down. Toss it away. It's a really bad idea. You know, Yahweh has been really good to us. This is what he said. If we do this, it's going to be there's going to be a negative consequence. Just set it down, and it'll all be cool. In fact, let's call God over. Let's talk to him about it. It was the instruction was don't make a habit of it. We'll be fine. But of course, that's not what happened. All right, so don't make a habit of eating from it, because as a consequence, not as a penalty, because as a consequence, within a day, you will absolutely die defined by having eaten from it, coming to resemble that which you have consumed. And the day here, very likely 1,000 years. To establish the 6 days plus the seventh of creation and the timeline ongoing, because Adam was right close to 1,000 years old, particularly considering his time in Eden when he passed away, and you know it goes up close to the time of the flood. So
very close to 1,000, yeah.
Right. So, but what it basically says is, you're going to die, and he began to die that very moment. He was immortal. He was no longer immortal. Yahweh Almighty said, it is not so. Instruction over. There you go. You got a choice with a consequence. Instruction's over. Yahweh Almighty said, it is not good, productive, or beneficial for the man, Adam, representing mankind created in God's image, to exist alone or by himself. I will engage and continually act on his behalf, producing a helper and supporter, one who assists and serves, a positive influence, who rescues and renews, like his corresponding counterpart. Describing that which is straightforward, right for him, open to him, and close by in his immediate proximity. 2:8. Well, we are social creatures. We do not do well alone.
Mm-hmm. No.
I don't like being alone. I am much more productive when and happiest, more fulfilled, surrounded by people. So when Yahweh Almighty, who fashioned and formed out of the elements of the earth every living animal of the expansive environment, which would be the area outside of the garden, in addition to every bird in the sky, he brought them to Adam in order to witness and delight in what he would call them and how he would greet and welcome them. It's Kara. Even if he would summon them and invite them to meet with him, approaching them. So God created this beautiful universe in the garden and outside. And God's idea of fulfilling man's deed, making man content and happy and satisfied, was to explore life with him. And so no matter how beautiful a rainbow may be, a waterfall, a sunrise or sunset, water glistening on the waves, a tropical beach, a jagged mountain ridge. No matter how beautiful those things may be, life is far more compelling, the living. That's why I think that that God created life out of DNA and that we will one day be able to write that code and conceive life and enjoy just that whole aspect of conceiving and nurturing and enjoying life. Going to be just enormously spectacular. Therefore, for the benefit of the relationship and to reveal the proper path to get the most out of life, that's Asher, everything Adam approached, welcomed and encountered, designating by name, that became the depiction and reputation of that living soul and conscious life form. 219. Adam summoned and he met with, reading by name and proper designation, all of the animals, the birds of the sky, and every conscious life form of the expansive environment, which would have meant that he encountered humans, male and female.
Mm-hmm.
They would have not had an Asama. But there was not found for Adam a helper and supporter, one who could assist and serve alongside, similar to or right for him. So God tried. He probably thought that it was likely that he would find something of all those life forms. We don't know what kind of dogs existed at the time, but goodness, you know, dogs have become spectacular. And you know, a dog can communicate with you and you can communicate with it. And they're far better at understanding our commands than we are at understanding theirs, for darn sure. So who's the smarter one, right?
My dog, who rescued who?
I can tell you my dog speaks two languages. She is quite conversant in French. She will do any command that you ask of her in French and in English.
Wow.
And I can't speak French with a lick. And I'm quite convinced that all of the sounds that she makes, I am not able to decipher them. I would have thought that Adam would have liked dogs. The aardvark, maybe a different story, but why did he like dogs? But there was not found for Adam a helper or supporter, one who could assist and serve alongside, similar to for him. As a result, Yahweh Almighty caused the man, Adam, to fall deeply asleep, similar to being under amnesia. And while he slept, he grasped hold of one of his ribs from his side and sutured up the place beneath it, replacing it with living tissue. Then Yahweh Almighty constructed with the rib, building for the purpose of the family and for procreation, establishing also for restoration that which, to reveal the benefits of the relationship, he had taken from the man, Asher, Adam, a woman for a wife. And he brought her to the man. And Adam responded, "Yowza."
Very wordy. Very wordy.
Oh, yeah, pretty
wax
wordy.
Quite poetic.
This is, this is the way to conduct one's life. Reminds me of the, if you read a book written in the 17th century,
mm-hmm.
and you read a book
yes.
that was written by someone of equal stature in the 21st century, Adam's response is more like the 17th century. It's long-winded, mm-hmm. sentences is basically a paragraph long. A paragraph can be a page. And today, you know, if you write a long sentence, you've lost people about 5 words into it. And if you have a paragraph that goes for a page, then you don't have any readers who are going to follow along. So,
where are the pictures?
Yeah, captions and sound bites, please. So Adam responded, "This is the way to conduct one's life, the motivation to push forward, and the persistent heartbeat of life. It's essential need out of my essence. A living being able to communicate intelligently for me to desire and to share positive thoughts. For this reason, she shall be greeted and welcomed and called woman, because out of man she was taken." to be found.
What a send-off, yeah.
Yeah, that's a heck of a welcome. I don't know why we don't see that on Valentine's cards.
Well, yeah, right? Well, that doesn't...
Why don't we have that at a marriage ceremony, right?
Yeah.
This is the way to connect.
Yeah.
Rather than saying, you know, for sickness and health, for better or for worse, to death do you part, which, by the way,
obey your husband.
It has nothing to do with anything God ever said. And, you know, at the exclusion of all others, again, has nothing to do with God. Nothing. Man imposed rule. Why don't we say, wow, this is the way to conduct one's life. This is the motivation to push forward. And this is the persistent heartbeat of life. It's essential nature. A living being able to communicate intelligently for me, to desire and to share positive thoughts. This is the reason she shall be greeted and welcomed and called woman. Is out of man she was taken. That'd make a much better vow, don't you think?
I think so.
Accordingly, therefore, a man shall leave. Now, this line it just seems so awkward here. I'm going to finish it, but it seems so awkward.
I know where you're going.
Yeah. It just doesn't fit. There's been no lecture here at all.
Yeah.
This is the lecture. Accordingly, therefore, a man. No, there is no there. At this point, there's only one father, and that's Yahweh. The only mother would be the set apart spirit, and we've seen her earlier in creation. And you certainly don't leave them to be with your spouse.
No.
So. You know, now it's true that to be part of the covenant, you leave your father's house, but that's really.
But they didn't. These people didn't even have belly buttons.
So yeah, they didn't. So this is really an awkward line here. It's so early in Bereshit that there's just no good way to check it in the Qumran scroll. Right, because the beginning of a scroll is the hardest part in terms of its survival. The part that was the most tightly wound on the inside and the part that was exposed to the elements on the outside, the parts that that decay. So we don't have this in the Dead Sea Scrolls. But accordingly, therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and engage, becoming close with his woman, and they shall exist as a unified pronouncement regarding life and an uplifting declaration concerning living in the flesh. Now, There are a lot of insights that would have been appropriate, but it's too early in the story here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what are we to make of that other than men and women as mother and father do come together to conceive and raise children? That is not where we are in the story. And that whole process is exceedingly symbolic of the covenant and very insightful in terms of what God is offering us and expecting in return. And the two, the man and the woman, were naked, and they were not ashamed, wrong, or bothered by it. Now, I can see God saying this because man has been wont to imply all sorts of rules on sexuality, and God does not have a hang-up with human sexuality. Celebrated. The curbs on human sexuality are extreme bad behavior. Don't have sex with somebody who is does not have the ability to consent, which is what we wrongly translate as lying with another man and homosexuality. No, it's when you examine the words as they revealed in the Torah, don't take advantage of a man sexually when he has no means to thwart the aggression. God does not. He says a lot about incest. He thinks incest is a huge breach of trust and exceedingly hostile to everyone. So all forms of incest from God's perspective are way outside the bounds of what's appropriate. pedophilia is inappropriate from God's point of view. Rape is inappropriate from God's point of view. Womanizing in the sense of having more women than you can love and nurture and protect and treat in an appropriate way, like having a large harem and you can't fulfill the needs. And the needs are many. I mean, time together, romance, conversation, support. God says, no, you can't have more than you can meaningfully make happy and satisfied. And lastly, no bestiality. That's really work. Otherwise, God doesn't care. So I can see this line and says, listen, they were naked. No big deal. Just fine. You know, it would be tragic for God to have designed us to be aroused in one another's presence and then say, I'm going to send you to hell if you are aroused in one another's presence. And, you know, I share this with Leah, and, you know, it's amazing the kind of wife I have, because most women would just slap you silly if you had to say this. But the fact is that men are not naturally monogamous. We just aren't. It's just our nature not to necessarily be monogamous. Now, in my particular case, I am so delighted with my situation. I can't even conceive of wanting someone else. But it's just kind of the way men have always been wired. Men are not naturally monogamous. And sometimes women get a misconception of romance and the way things ought to be by establishing rules based upon monogamy that probably aren't in anybody's best interest. I'm not advocating anything other than it's just the fact is you study Yahweh's word. Almost everyone that Yahweh worked with, most had multiple wives. Mm-hmm. And you never hear God saying anything about that Dode was wrong. You don't hear him saying he committed adultery or anything of that nature, having multiple wives. It's if he had stopped at 9, I'm sure, at 7, God would have been happier than if he went to 8. Nothing of the difference between the number 7 and 8, but Bathsheba.
But the cost.
The way that he went about that was not good. And God told him, you know, what you did here was, we're going to have a little time out. What you did here is not good. You didn't need to do that. You didn't need to do that. So they were naked and not ashamed. They were not bothered by it. Bingo. I mean, these are tough transitions. I mean, we go point, and right now to the spellbinding serpent. So I guess they were not ashamed and they were naked would say that the way that most people get their pities in a bunch, if I may use that term, is that it's always something to do with sexuality, in the religious point of view, promiscuity. And yet, if nakedness was just fine, and the next line is, and the serpent slithered into the garden, then sensuality was not the problem. So that's an important point. The spellbinding serpent, he was cunning and clever, more so than any other life form relative to the broad and open way that Yahweh Almighty had deployed. The fact that God says that he was clever, that he was subtle, this caused me a lot of problems as I was doing my most recent edit pass through questioning Paul. Because Paul's not clever, and he is not subtle. He's a blithering idiot. He deliberately misquotes God. He misappropriates what God says. He twists it in such a way that it takes 5 seconds and you can figure out that he's lying. He contradicts himself constantly. He says things that are just so unbelievably stupid that you could never mistake him for being clever. And he's not the least bit subtle. It's just completely irrational.
Maybe that's the joke. I mean, Muhammad's the same way.
So one of the things that struck me is that, you know, there is really not much of a rebuke of HaSatan in the Torah and prophets, is there? No.
No.
It says, you know, that HaSatan wanted to be perceived as above the Most High, which means he wants to be worshipped
right.
as God.
He wants to be God, yeah.
He wants to be known as God. He wants to be worshipped as God. Very important insight, because it means that the God of religion is actually Satan. And that if you think that an occultist or Satan worshiper is worshiping Satan, then you are a nincompoop. Satan despises that. So he wants to be worshipped as God. And you're going to see that God has this one rebuke of the serpent here in the garden, and says, you know, here's your fate. But that's it. And yet with Paul, he goes on and on and on and on. I mean, Chabaok 1, 2, and 3 is entirely devoted to Paul. Many of the Mizmor, the adversary in the Mizmor, everybody's saying, oh, Paul's constantly building. No, he's attacking Shaul, Paul. The Marshal, parables, Proverbs.
Mm-hmm.
It's Dode attacking Shaul, Paul.
Oh. Shaul, yes.
He is listed throughout the prophets. So God is constantly haranguing Paul and says almost nothing beyond what we're about ready to read on Satan. So Paul is a much more disgusting from God's point of view than Satan. Well, that's something to think about, isn't it? So the
well,
small
could it be?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it could be he created him to fail, so they'd have an alternative where the mm-hmm. disappointment is man was not supposed to fail. He's disappointed in man. He wouldn't have been disappointed in Satan. Satan was fulfilling a function that he was designed to do,
mm-hmm.
to be an emissary.
That's a valid point. But it's also a valid point that while Satan demon-possessed Shaul, and he attempted to control him, I am convinced that Satan lost control of him.
Probably.
I think Paul.
Probably.
Paul
I think
far
that's good,
worse
yeah.
and more belligerent and egotistical than Satan could handle. I think Satan was as disgusted
competing.
By Paul mm-hmm. As was Jung.
Wow.
I think when Paul ends up in
Sheol
and says, you know, Satan, you're the one that I did all this for, Satan, but you're such a disgusting, egotistical idiot. What a blathering idiot. God, I could have gotten the village idiot to do a better job than you. So
still billions of them.
Yeah. So then the serpent said to the woman, so what if it's true? So what if it's true that God said, you may not make a habit of eating from any tree of the garden? No. It's the opposite of what God said. But
mm-hmm.
being the opposite, that means that every word but one was correct. So it's amazing that you could have a sentence where every word in the sentence was accurate, and one, a negation of lo, is the only
mm-hmm.
thing that is inaccurate, and it makes the sentence the antithesis of what God said. God did not say you should not make a habit of eating from any tree in the garden. He said exactly the opposite. Every tree in the garden is there for you to eat. So God's statement was the opposite of what Satan had said, but because there were common threads within the words, it's easy for people to miss that. The woman said to this tempting and toxic creature, from the fruit of the tree of the garden, we can eat. But from the fruit of the tree, which is at the center of the garden, God said you should not actually make a habit of eating from it. That's true. God said that.
Mm-hmm. He did.
In addition, you guys should not make contact with it lest you will have chosen to die. Well, the last
don't
part was true.
It.
But they don't touch it? No.
No.
Inaccurate. Then the venomous serpent replied to the woman, "You absolutely will not die." So, Satan lied.
Yes.
False hope. You can do it and you're going to live forever. Trust me on this. False hope.
Yeah.
Then the venomous serpent said, "No, you absolutely will not die." Move. Because instead, the Almighty knows that truthfully, in the day that you eat from it, your eyes will be opened. Then you will exist like God, knowing good and evil. No, by the way, much of that is true. It's not what God said.
Yes.
It's extrapolating.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make it inaccurate. Yes, God knows that in the day that you eat from it, your eyes will be opened.
It's true.
You will know more than you know now. And
yeah, what a burden. What a burden.
Yeah. So, but, you know, knowing more than you know now is not necessarily good. I do not know what it's like to step in a lava flow. I do not know what it's like to get run over by a truck. You know, I don't know what it's like to be shot in the gut with a gun.
Yeah.
But I don't
never
know
will.
The advantage of knowing those things. But
no.
Anyway, then he said, "Then you will exist like God, knowing good and bad." That part was true, but it was misleading at the same time. You know, it's true that God knows good and bad. Okay.
Yeah, but for what purpose?
So
you want to know it.
If God knows good and bad, and you're going to know good and bad, then you are more like God, right? But the inference was, you're going to be a God. You're going to be just
true.
Like God. No, you're going to be like God in one way. And that one way isn't necessarily good. In fact, that one way has good and bad connotations to it. So the inference was, this is what's subtle, you're going to be like God, you're going to be like a God, you will become a God, is the inference, when in fact what he was saying was actually true. God knows good and evil and good and bad. If you eat from this, you're going to know good and bad, so you're going to be like God in that respect. It would have been completely and totally honest if he had said, "The Almighty knows that in the day that you eat from it, your eyes will be opened. You will know things that are bad and counterproductive in addition to the things that you currently know that are good." Now, I'm not sure there's any advantage of knowing bad, but nonetheless, you will know it. And then you will exist knowing bad just like God knows bad. Not that that's any good.
Yeah, that's not a good sales pitch, though. You can't sell that one.
I'm sorry. Yeah, well, yeah. Hey, but it's true.
That's true.
I'm sorry. So,
don't
sell. Far better than me. You know. Wait, listen, Yahweh can't sell the truth, so how am I going to do it? Then the woman looked and saw indeed the tree was beautiful and pleasing. Of course, it's beautiful and pleasing. God created it, and the
God
tree
created everything in the world.
Right.
Yeah.
That it was a source of food to consume, and that indeed it was visually appealing and desirable, even eliciting craving. Ooh, she's having an emotional response.
Yes.
So she coveted the tree to impart insights, inspire success, convey understanding. Oh man, am I going to be impressed? Impressive to Adam. I'm going to know this stuff. I'm going to be so insightful. I'm going to be so successful. Give me some of that apple.
Well, you just a load of me.
Yeah. Therefore, she grasped hold and seized from its fruit, and she ate. You know, I said apple, and I never should have said that, because we have no idea what the fruit was.
No, it's just fruit.
The likelihood of eating an apple is really, really slim. Then she, and by the way, the tree is symbolic. There was nothing in the fruit that caused anything to change with Chawadol. Nothing. You know, we don't eat something and it causes us to know things we don't currently know. Knowledge takes effort. So it was simply a choice with a consequence. And nothing more than a choice with a consequence. Then she also gave it to her man who was in a relationship with her, and then he ate. That was something that Adam should not have done. Adam should have said, wait a minute, this is wrong. You know, we talked about
what
this.
What are you doing?
Set it down.
No,
yeah,
no.
So set it down. Let's work this out. God. So the eyes, perceptions, and perspective of both of them were opened, and they recognized as a result that they were naked and exposed. Now, they had been together this whole time, naked, and it didn't bother them in the least. It was good. And now they are naked and exposed, and it's bothersome. Therefore, they're not talking about a lack of clothing. They are saying that when everything about them was positive and good, and they were able to be seen and be in the presence of God, but everything about them was good, you're not uncomfortable. You don't feel exposed. But if you're doing something that you know is counterproductive, that you ought not be doing, that is embarrassing in front of a perfect God, then you're going to feel really vulnerable and exposed. And so they had done something they ought not have done, something that a loving father asked them not to do. And so that is why they felt vulnerable. It had nothing to do with their physical appearance and their lack of apparel.
No, even a little kid with a hand in the cookie jar does that.
That's right.
You know, when
that's correct.
They know.
Yeah, and they stitch together fig foliage, acting to make for themselves a covering. The story here is that that with the fall, there would be reconciliation or redemption. It is the fig tree and the foliage of the fig tree that is symbolic of Israel budding again prior to Yahweh's return and bearing fruit again so that Yahweh can honor his covenant promises. And then they heard the sound of Yahweh, the Almighty, walking in the protective enclosure of the garden regarding his spirit. Therefore, the man Adam and his woman withdrew and hid from the presence of Yahweh Almighty in the midst of the garden's trees. Therefore, God had a corporeal nature. Sorry, Akiba and Maimonides, you were wrong in your creation of Judaism. And also, Christians, you were wrong. God is not omnipresent or and is not omniscient based upon this testimony. Yep. Yahweh, who is God Almighty, called out to the man Adam, and he asked him, where are you? And he said, I heard the sound, your sound, in the garden, and because I was naked and exposed, out of reverence and respect, I was concerned, and I withdrew, having foreclosed something that I cherished. Yeah, he shut the door.
Mm.
On on this completely open, totally exposed, and yet enjoyable, loving relationship. You know, as I've always thought, that the more vulnerable you can be with someone you love, then the deeper and the more meaningful that relationship is. He spoiled that. And he said, who approached and reported to you that you were without adequate clothing, naked and exposed? Interesting question. Well, why is it that all of a sudden you think that you're naked and that's somehow wrong? He's saying again that our nudity is not a problem, that the problem is that when we do things that we should not have done, we feel uncomfortable in God's presence.
Yes.
Did you eat from the tree which, for the benefit of the relationship, I provided instructions for you not to be defined by eating from it. Adam said, the woman you gave to be with me to make the relationship better offered it to me from the tree.
Under the bus.
Yeah, throw the woman under the bus. Sorry, Adam. In fact, Adam, the up to this point, 99% of the mistake is on Adam, not Chawa.
Yeah.
Yes, Chawa wanted to be like God. Yes, Chawa wanted something that she should not have wanted. She coveted. She had an emotional response. She misquoted God. But the fact is that Chawa gave that instruction to Adam, and it was Adam's responsibility to share it with Chawa and to honor it himself and to man up, not to be a wussy. He didn't do it. So Adam's far more culpable here than his Chawa.
Mm-hmm.
And then Yahweh said to the woman, why and how did you do this? And the woman said, with ongoing implications, the tempting and toxic creature deceived and deluded me, and I ate. Now, the thing that is important there, too, that we didn't mention previously, is that God allowed the adversary into the garden, and he allowed the adversary to misquote him, to corrupt his testimony. Therefore, when Christians say, I can't believe that God would allow anyone to corrupt his word, it is the inerrant word of God, then they're not reading what is actually written. God says explicitly that he allowed Satan in to do this very thing.
Yeah.
And of course, it takes complete ignorance, because there are as many variations of the text as there are copies of the text. So accepting responsibility is a simple, straightforward concept. It's perplexing that 6,000 years later, less than one in a million are willing to stand up and be accountable. Considering the example Yahweh has set for us, it must be a heartbreak for him to see us in this way. You know, I began this by saying, boy, when you you look what the people did inside of the U.S. Capitol, well, that footage didn't become available until fairly recently, and is out of context with what transpired elsewhere. Boy, it's bad. A lot of people acted in a wholly inappropriate way and committed criminal acts. And so we ought to acknowledge that. And what Trump said is absolutely wrong. That doesn't exonerate Democrats for trying to impeach him now or calling this an insurrection, because it isn't an insurrection. An insurrection has to go so far beyond, I mean, literally replacing a government, tearing down one, and in a coup. And that
it wasn't an armed coup.
No, clearly these people didn't come back to Washington saying, we're going to destroy the United States of America and we're going to establish a new country, and we're going to declare ourselves the leader of this country. And once we sack the government, we're not leaving. No, it wasn't an insurrection. So since Yahweh knew the answer to his questions, and since he queried Adam and Chawa, but not Satan, we can reasonably conclude that had either admitted to having been wrong and have asked for the opportunity to show that they would not repeat the same mistake, that Yahweh would have obliged. He did not create us to judge us, nor condemn us, but instead to raise us. However, until we are willing to admit that we have been wrong and show a desire to improve, there's very little God can do for us. The same is true for any parent under any circumstance. Now, at this point, Kirk, we can go right into chapter 5. It's called The Shawl, Revealing Stories, Fragile Families, and we'll talk about the specifics of Yahweh's response to each of them. You said that you were reading Chronicles. events.
What I'd like you to do is get into this a little further, and I'll show you where it's appropriate, because I wanted to quote something of your comment. So when we get real close to it, I'll let you know.
Yeah. All right, that's fair enough. Bottom line here is, for the choice to reject to be credible, deceit and death must have an advocate. I mean, they're not very appealing. So since they're really unappealing, they better have someone that's an advocate for them. And that is the reason that Satan was permitted to enter the garden. You were correct. Satan was created for that purpose. Well, the world is no longer Eden. The adversary is still here, and for the exact same reason. Of that said, 99.9999999% of what is blamed on Satan has nothing to do with Satan. It's just us making bad choices. To demonstrate how serious God is about choice, even when our planet has returned to the conditions depicted in the garden, after 1,000 years of joyous living, Satan's going to be allowed once again to spoil the party. Free will is not only a prerequisite for a loving relationship. Choosing well must have its rewards. Likewise, and this is not a participation trophy. Likewise, choosing poorly cannot be without a consequence. After Adam and Chava's disregard for Yahweh's instructions, life would be different. God's guidance would have no credibility if he were free to ignore, cancel, or change it without consequence as a result. Yahweh did not forgive them, at least not at this time. This is bad news for those who have accepted Catholicisms and Christianities, even Judaism, Mormonisms, copious and consistent negations and alterations of Yahweh's instructions. Blaming Chawa is like saying that someone is responsible for our bad decisions. It infers that God is going to overlook our rewording and repudiation of his directions just because everybody else is doing it. Hey, God, you can't be mad at me. The only other human here, she gave it to me and she ate.
Can you hear the same message?
Oh, well, yeah. Says, you can't be blaming me. You were the one that letting this cotton-picking creature here come into the garden. We were just going along with the program.
And what you said when you saw her the first time.
Right.
You got
blaming.
Nothing to
blaming Satan, which is to attribute our errant ways to religious, political, or academic deceptions, did not help Jawa. We have to be personally responsible, personally accountable. God has established a standard. And it's an easy standard to meet. It's even an open book test. He has communicated his rules, all of which, by the way, are benefits for us. You know, you want to play baseball, it's not a hit if you if the ball goes outside the foul lines. If you're playing golf and you can't keep it on the property, then I'm sorry. The penalty.
Get off my lawn.
Yeah, you can't play off the neighbor's lawn. God has established a standard. And if you follow his standard, you're better off. It is better to hit the ball in the fairway and to be in the short grass than it is hidden behind the trees. He has communicated his rules and his remedies, and he's going to judge those who violate them, rendering their social, religious, academic, and political excuses moot. It is but one acceptable approach. Answer his mikre invitations. All right, so this is the next statement. Yahweh, who is God, said to the spellbinding serpent, he started with him, to the Nakash, the sorcerer snake. As a consequence, not as a penalty, just as a result, of you having acted this way, Asha Zot, of you having done this, you have brought a curse upon yourself. You have invoked injury, misfortune, and harm, earning retribution for yourself. I'm not doing anything to you. You did this to yourself. You were responsible just like they're responsible. You did this to yourself. More than any other beast, more than any other form of life of this environment. On your belly, you shall move about. What's that mean? That means that, I'm sorry, but you're not going to soar with the eagles. You know, you're not going to be able to spend an eternity being a free spirit. No.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to grovel like a reptile. And you shall move about in the dirt. You're not the afar is as far from the spiritual realm as one can be. And you shall eat this dirt all the days of your life. You're going to consume the minute elements and particles that comprise matter. And indeed, he has consumed a whole lot of humans, hasn't he?
Yep. That's quite an insight there too, you know, what you say following this. I was kind of like, wow, that is, you're good sometimes.
Sometimes the words that you have, if you just think about them, things like this occur, for there to be justice, there has to be recompense. There must be recompense.
You know what you, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But how you describe how we could eat dirt. This is, this is brilliant. Everybody should listen. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah. I'm sorry.
For a judge to be moral, he must hold those who deceive, destroy, steal, and kill accountable. Satan used misrepresentations, errant citations, a straw man, an outright lie to project his failings into the mix and deceive Chuck, destroying her relationship with Yahweh. Robbing her of her home and misleading her soul. For that, Satan will be punished. Satan's sentence, however, was not death. Spirits, unlike souls, are immortal. Even God cannot kill them. That is why the misfortune the adversary brought upon himself is retribution. And his retribution, recompense, will be eternal anguish. Satan will be incarcerated for all but the last fleeting moments of the Sukkah millennial Shabbat. He will be released in the waning days with similar tactics to deprive some of those born during the thousand-year right, if you will, causing them to be wrong with God. This will be the final rebellion, and then Satan, his fellow demons, is who have leagued with him will be judged and found wanting. They will find themselves in an eternal prison called Sheol, made especially for Satan and his colleagues. This penitentiary is indistinguishable from a black hole, a lightless place of emotional anguish, separated from God. It is a place where the pressures are so intense, the minute particles which comprise matter are consumed. Ultimately,
that's the part.
It becomes a one-dimensional construct where only time exists and everything else is considered. Satan will have been largely responsible for everyone whose soul is consumed by this black hole. There are three ways to interpret God's message to the adversary. The simplest would have been understood by the first person to hear the story. Satan acted badly and was punished. Groveling on one's belly and eating dirt is never a good thing. All right? That's the simplest.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Spiritually, Satan was cast down as a result. His days are spent in the material realm devouring mankind. Adam was created from the very substance that Satan was predicted to consume. Adam was comprised of the dust of the earth. And so Satan was condemned to devour the very stuff of humanity. And he was precluded from the spiritual realm because there is no material, physical dust in heaven. So he was burdened by that which he consumed, and it is that very matter that is sucked into that black hole and kept there. It devours it. Scientifically, the leading astrophysicist of our day, Stephen Hawking, invested the last decade of his life advancing the theory which is suggested here that matter can be consumed. He has postulated that this condition exists within the confines of a black hole. While most scientists despise his conclusion, knowing that physics itself is based upon the conservation of matter, Hawking, who died in 2018, was inadvertently confirming what Yahweh has revealed. The first thing God said he will do following the millennial Shabbat is to completely destroy the entire universe. But do not be alarmed. He will instantaneously create a new one, this time with us as witnesses, in addition to being beneficiaries.
That's an insight. Wow.
Yeah. Can you imagine how wonderful that's going to be? So the prophetic portrayal really of what follows, and we'll go one step deeper in this, and since we're still recording but not broadcasting, and then we'll go from there. It says that the relationship between Satan and mankind, especially as it is manifest in the role of religion and politics, having been played in beguiling and suppressing people through time. But it's especially poignant when seen from the perspective of the chosen people. And as we consider what God says next, think about how Satan's religions, Christianity, Islam, and socialist secular humanism, have all targeted Jews as their enemy. No population on earth has been treated with more rancor longer than God's witnesses. And that's the common thread. Christianity, Islam, and socialist secular humanism, they all target Jews.
Hate them.
Yeah.
Absolutely hate them.
Yeah. By the way, all three were created by Jews as well.
Yes.
Hostility. I've met the enemy, and he is me. Yeah. Hostility and animosity, wa'iba, enmity, an adversarial approach, deep-seated dislike and rancor, bitterness, ill will. I will constitute and establish between you and between the woman, and between that which you sow and her offspring. He shall crush your head, and you shall press down upon his heel. Well, the thing that Satan has done is to create religions that strike at the heel. And you might say, what do you mean strike at the heel? Well, heel is Achille in Hebrew. And the name Yaakov is based on heel. And Yaakov is Yisrael, and Yisrael are the chosen people. And they're the basis of the covenant, the basis of all revelation, the basis of the promised land, the recipient of all of Yahweh's promises. Yisrael, every one of Yahweh's prophets, descendant of Yisrael, a descendant of Yaakov. And so the insight here is you're going to bruise the heel. He's going after Jews. That's what you're going to. That's what he did. And
No question.
Yep. No, and yet, no question, the way that man will strike back is at the head. So the answer is to strike back at Satan. You don't do what Yahweh did. Don't say, I really like that. It feels good, looks good, make me feel good. No. strike back in the most logical possible way. Compare what Satan inspires to what God inspires. Strike him on the head. Think your way through it. Use evidence and reason. Yahweh's Torah and prophets are trustworthy. They're reliable. They're valuable. They're useful. Take them and compare what God said to what the religious are saying, to what the political are saying, to what the conspiratorial are saying, to what the militaristic are saying, to what's being reported in academia and the media. And if there is a conflict, and there always are, distrust those who are contradicting God.
You can verify what God says. That's the beauty of this whole program. Oh, we
right.
do.
And we can do that in our heads, and so we can attack Satan, not in feelings, not in faith, not in fists, you know, not as a jihadist, but in our heads, in our minds. Let's strike at the whole thought process of the whole thing. The deception is part of religion and politics and militarism and conspiracy. I think that's the message here.
Mm-hmm.
So, Kirk, we'll get, I guess, to, I think you wanted to play off the term Asher, and we'll get to that.
We'll get to that next week, yeah.
Next week.
That's fine. Yes, sir.
But, I'm sure you probably didn't think we would do the whole review of the entire text of the creation.
That don't bother me.
Yeah, from the creation of man all the way through the man's rejection of God's testimony. But I thought sometimes that review is good because it's I know it's true for me that that if I don't go through material a lot and then consider it and talk about it and apply it, I have a tendency to forget.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And if you're going to, again, if somebody says something that's counter to God, how do you know unless you remember what God said? And how do you remember what God said unless we go over it and over it again?
This is so funny. I'm looking at 314 on the Masoretic text in a NASA lexicon, and it says, it starts out, the Lord God. And then if you look to the right-hand column, it says, Yahweh Elohim.
Mm-hmm.
How do they come up with the Lord?
Yeah.
It's Yahweh. Yahweh, right there in the...
Right.
I mean, and God
is how
Elohim.
Do you call it an errant word of God and yet change it?
And then
talk about it. Yeah, presumptuous. I mean,
and anybody can look on this site and see it and they go, well, wait a minute. But they don't. They just say, oh, well, that means
God doesn't care what you call him. Well, then why did he write his name 7,000 times if he doesn't care? And why did he say when he's introducing himself to Moshe, this is my one and only name, and the way I want to be remembered for all time.
Yeah. I'm stunned. I mean,
nobody knows how to pronounce it. Well, it is only three letters. And all three are three of the most commonly written letters in the entire language. The first letter is pronounced exactly the way we pronounce a Y today. It makes the Y sound. It's a Yod. There are got to be 1,000 Hebrew words have a yod in them, and it's pronounced just like we pronounce a Y today. And you know, in English, a Y in as many languages is a consonant vowel. It is true in Hebrew.
A-E-I-O-U.
And also a W. The hey is God actually tells you how to pronounce the yod in the hey, and when he's talking to Moses, he says, "I am who I am."
Hanaya.
Ihaya Asher Ihaya Haya, I exist. Haya, Y yod, hey, ya.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's the first. the syllable. Yeah, it's from Haya. Is there anybody out there that says, well, you know, we don't know how to pronounce Haya?
Well, then nope. You just don't know how to, you just can't speak.
Does anybody say, we don't know how to pronounce Torah?
No.
That's
or
the
Shalom.
Odd, the end of Torah, too. And then, as for the Y
it's so
in the
ridiculous.
Middle, what's the most common Hebrew term? Shalom. Well,
shalom,
the O
absolutely.
In Shalom doesn't come from a Hebrew O. Hebrew doesn't have an O.
No,
it's the W that conveys the O sound. Just like we have so many English
how now,
words.
Brown cow.
Yeah, how now, brown cow. Oh, the O sound is a derivative of the W. And, yeah. No, for example. The word, you ought to know better. Hey, it's
duh.
Right there.
Well, there.
Yeah, and the only thing. Other letter is another hey. Ah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well. Might pronounce it the same way. What do you think?
Yes. And so there's 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet, five of which are vowels. And there's nobody that disputes how to pronounce Torah. And yet Torah has got a wa for the O sound and an ah, a hey for the ah oh. sound.
And they say Elohim.
No one's disputing that. No one's disputing that Shalom has got an O sound in the middle of it. It's from the wall. It's not difficult stuff. El and Elohim is from Eloah.
You
that's
have
the
to be like
and
Satan. You have to become like Satan. You have to just either know his name, or ignore his name, spit on his name, or change it.
Right. And so why did they change his name? Because if you know God's name, then you know Christianity is false. You can't peddle Christianity if you replace Yahweh's name in his Torah prophets. Because then there can be no Jesus, there can be no Christ.
No Jesus.
And there can be no Jehovah. And there's no Lord.
Yeah, no Lord.
And how do you have a religion where man's word in the Talmud, in the Mishnah, rules supreme if God has a name and you can know him personally? If the God who has a name says, listen to me, how in the world do you get people convinced that you ought to listen to rabbis instead? So this is a very serious point when you said you're looking at any translation and they all say, and the Lord God, when this actually says Yahweh, the Almighty.
Well, they even have it in parentheses over here to the right. I mean, it's not like they don't know. It's just awful. It's just awful.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
It is pathetic. So we'll pick the story up at Bavrishith 3:13 time next week, and it should be enjoyable. May Yah bless.
So.
Have a wonderful Shabbat. Look forward to being with you next week. God bless.
Okay. Good night. Shalom.